This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guest today is Jim Puckett, Executive Director and Founder of the Basel Action Network, a nonprofit with a mission to champion global environmental health and justice and focused on confronting the global environmental justice and economic inefficiency of toxic trade and its devastating impacts. BAN created and manages eStewards, a certification standard for the best recycling. Jim Puckett is here to tell us about the eTrash Transparency Project and the Disconnect Report, co-authored with Eric Hobson and Monica Wang. Welcome, Jim.
Hi there. It's good to be here.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about BAN, the Basel Action Network?
Sure. We started way back in 1997. As a watchdog organization of a treaty called the Basel Convention, which is where we get our name from, Basel Action Network. And that treaty is a very unique one in that it is the first of its kind in that it's created by the developing countries for protecting their own interests so they don't get dumped on by rich developed countries with toxic waste and toxic waste of all kinds. When it was first created, it was about factory waste and chemical waste. Nowadays, the big waste stream that's most problematic, that's being traded across borders and dumped on developing countries, is post-consumer waste, like from you and I. It's like electronic equipment, old computers, your old phone, your old television. So the treaty has kind of transformed its targets and its focus to really looking at this issue of electronic waste.
Would you remind us of the toxics that can be found in electronic waste?
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, you think these things are real benign, and when they're sitting on your lap or the laptop, they're not going to harm you very much. A little bit of off-gassing, perhaps, some chemicals. But the problem is what's in them when they go to dismantle it or when you create it. When you create it, all kinds of exposure issues as well in the factories in Asia. But when you go to get rid of it, there's lead in there, there's mercury in there, there's brominated flame retardants in there. And these things cause tremendous problems if it's not really carefully done.
Would you just comment briefly on some of the health effects you might expect from the toxics that are in these e-waste products?
Wow. Well, lead is a neurotoxin. It really causes problems, especially with the development of children. You don't want lead near children and pregnant women. You don't want it around at all. And so the workers in Asia that are dealing with old circuit boards that have lead solders in them are really facing exposure issues. Mercury is similar. It's even more toxic and can surprise people sometimes because it has chronic effects, but it can also knock you over dead sometimes. So mercury is in the flat screen lamps, the little backlights that are flat screens that we're looking at right now, perhaps have mercury tubes in them. So they're not a problem when you're using it, but man, when you create that equipment and when you have to go to dispose of it, it is hazardous waste.
You've already alluded to this a bit, but why is export of hazardous e-waste a problem?
Well, what's happening is, like all the causes of pollution, what pollution comes from is people externalizing costs. They say, wow, I won't have to pay for this if I just make someone else deal with it. So that's the source of all pollution, whether it's in a developing country or it goes into the ocean or into our atmosphere. They're saying, I don't want to deal with these pollutants. I'm not going to pay the costs of mitigating or preventing them in the first place. I'm going to find a hiding place or someone who will never present me with a bill and say, you got to pay for the damage you caused. And that's how we treat developing countries right now. It's very easy because we can put things on a ship, send it off, and the developing country gets faced with the burden, and yet we will never get the bill saying, you've damaged my territory. So this is what happens when we export hazardous waste. We're externalizing costs and real harm to people that can least afford to deal with it.
Why was the eTrash Transparency Project started, and what is its purpose?
Well, you know, we've been working on this e-waste problem for some time now, and I thought it was going to be an easier one to solve. We've been working for more than a decade since we first went to China and saw all this American electronic waste. There's a place there that was called Guiyu, and for over a decade, it was receiving a lion's share of the electronic equipment that we discard. So our old computers, our old phones, laptops, etc., all going to this area in Guangdong province called Guiyu. And we discovered it. And we thought, well, we can shut this down by just showing pictures of how bad it is. And everyone will agree that we shouldn't do this Unfortunately, the United States was the country where most of it was coming from, and it's the only country that hadn't signed the Basel Convention, this treaty I was telling you about, which is there to protect the developing countries from this type of trade, this toxic trade. So it was a lot harder to get the United States to wake up. So what we did, realizing that we had a dysfunctional Congress, we probably weren't going to be able to get a law in place, probably weren't going to get this treaty ratified by the U.S. right away, we said, okay, let's use market forces. We are going to create a certification and try to drive the industry and move the market to them and tell the consumers about it and tell big businesses and banks, use Easter's recyclers only because they are not going to export. They're going to act like the Basel Convention really exists in the United States when it doesn't. And so we created that certification. It still exists. It's wonderful. It hasn't had the traction that it really needs to have to drive the market forces to keep the waste in the United States and not to dump it on developing countries.
Would you say how the e-transparency project is set up? What did you do?
Well, a lot of people have been saying, well, you know, this export problem, it's really not a problem anymore. We're solving it. And there were some studies done to show that it was really not a bad problem. And we didn't believe those studies 1 minute. And so they didn't use real data. So we thought you got to use real data. You can't just guess how much is going offshore. You've got to really quantify it. So we achieved a grant. We got a grant from the Body Shop Foundation for $55,000 over the course of 2 years. And with that money, we put trackers, GPS, electronic geolocation devices, little trackers like little cell phones, into printers, into LCD flat screen monitors, and into the old CRT monitors. We did it 200 of them, 200 of these devices that were tagged with trackers, and we put them into the marketplace by delivering them to recyclers. We also delivered a whole bunch of them to the Goodwill charity. So 46 of them went to Goodwill, 149 of them went to recyclers all over the country. And then we sat back and waited to see where they went. And lo and behold, 32.5% of them went offshore to Asia. And if you just looked at the ones that were delivered to recyclers, it was even higher than that. It was 39%. So 65 of the trackers out of the 200 went offshore, and most of that trade was illegal.
Would you describe what you found when you personally visited sites where the trackers ended up?
Yeah, so a lot of these, believe it or not, were going to a part of Hong Kong, which is called New Territories, and it's kind of sandwiched in there between the Hong Kong everybody knows, the big high-rise buildings, the fancy port and everything, and mainland China. So it's way up on the border. And there's hundreds of what I call electronics junkyards. And there they're taking the stuff and smashing it and tearing it apart in the most crude way imaginable, which would be okay if it wasn't for the fact that there's mercury in there. And those little mercury tubes are breaking in the workers' faces all day long. And there's also toners in the printers that are flying out, and people are breathing those toners, which are probable carcinogens. And that's the problem. And they're using illegal labor force. So the way they get by with doing it in Hong Kong is illegal immigrants are coming in there getting these jobs under the counter, and they have no protections under the law in Hong Kong whatsoever. So they're just completely exposed and oblivious to the hazards.
What labels did you see on some of the e-waste at the sites you visited?
Oh, man. There's banks, there's prisons, there were libraries, schools. Los Angeles City School System is one of the ones we picked up. So the asset tags of the old users are still on them. And you can just wade through these piles, these mountains of stuff, and see where it all came from. Again, almost all of it is from the United States.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Jim Puckett, Executive Director and Founder of the Basel Action Network. Our topic is BAND's e-Trash Transparency Project and their Disconnect Report. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. Would you underscore the key findings of your Disconnect Report?
Sure. The report really focused in this time, and this is the first of several reports we're going to do on this basic project. So the first report honed in on what Goodwill and their partnership with Dell Computers, they have a partnership called Reconnect, and Dell uses Goodwills around the country to collect electronics for their take-back program, which is required by many state laws. So it sounds like a great idea because Goodwills are all over the place and they're kind of used to dealing with used stuff. And they have a very strict policy, which we helped Dell write, that said, we are not going to export this material. And Dell, if you go to their website and dig around, you'll find that policy, that they are absolutely in support of the Basel Convention and the Basel ban, not sending things to developing countries. Sounds great. We helped them put this policy in place. We checked on the implementation of it, and sadly, 7 of the trackers from Goodwill went offshore to Asia, 6 of them in the Dell Reconnect program. So we are really confronting Dell with reforms that they need to make to stop this from ever happening again. And one of the ones that's quite obvious, and it feeds into the whole issue of trash transparency, Dell right now refuses to tell the public who does their recycling. And we can't think of a lot of good reasons why that would be, why you have a policy where you don't tell people where their waste goes. We believe the public has the right to know where their old electronics ends up, and that people do care about these things. They have the right to know where their garbage goes, where their sewage goes. Why not their electronic waste, especially in a very public-oriented program like Reconnect? So we've challenged Dell to stop being secret about that. We think if the world was watching those recyclers, this wouldn't have happened. But Dell's extremely secretive about who that does their environmental processing. So that's one strong recommendation we have.
What has been the response of Dell to your recommendations and also to the tracking report itself?
Well, initially, they've made all the right noises. So they've thanked us profusely for doing this and said they'll get right on it and try to solve this problem. But time will tell whether they really get down to the heart of it or they're just going to greenwash this over and hope it goes away. The telltale thing will be whether they start telling us who they're using and how they're making the verification process. We would like them to start using tracking devices. We'd like to spread this technology. We think it's very useful because this trade has been hidden for so long and people are very sneaky that even in certification programs, people can just cheat the auditors because they know when they're arriving and they just keep double books and what have you. These tracking devices are like little lie detectors. They go out there, dispassionately tell you the truth and report back, and they're amazing in that way for an enforcement tool and for civil society and society in general to really surface what's hidden.
In your tracking study, you also found that Total Reclaim, a Seattle-based recycler who had previously received your E-Steward certification, had exported mercury-containing LCD monitors to Hong Kong. Would you tell us how you followed up on this information?
Yes, it was a very sad day when we looked at our data and saw that one of our own E-Steward certified recyclers, one of the founders of the program, was cheating it. And we thought, this can't be right. And then it happened again. So 2 sets of data, both pointing to the fact that the equipment that we deployed with the trackers in it, we deployed it down in Portland, then went to Total Reclaim in Seattle, and then went very quickly offshore to Hong Kong. We even went so far as to go to Hong Kong and follow those trackers, go to the precise facilities where they ended up, these really dirty, awful facilities where they're smashing equipment and exposing people. And there we saw Total Reclaim's boxes with their labels all over them. And we brought that information back to them, and PBS also was with us at that time, and they had it all on their film. And at that point, Total Reclaim said, yes, we admit we've done this. And they've issued a public statement saying they're very sorry. They will never let this happen again. They lost their vision. But it's extremely disappointing. But again, it underlines the fact that these little guys, these little trackers are lie detectors, and they're needed to confirm what's really going on this planet right now. There's some really shady activities that we need to stop.
And Total Reclaim has lost their certification.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Do they have the right to reclaim it at some point? Or?
Yes. So it's a 2-year withdrawal. And after 2 years, we reexamine what they've done. Their system's in place to prevent this from ever happening. They're in a kind of probationary mode at that point. But they can come back into the program. We do believe in redemption.
So having found violations by a company you certified, to what extent are you planning to make changes in the certification program?
Well, that's a really good question. So we're learning as we go that audits can be cheated on, and these things aren't worth a darn, these certifications, unless they're real. So some of the money we've set aside already, knowing that there were issues with audits, we've set it aside to do unannounced inspections. So we had a program which was funded by those that are certified to have us show up in any moment in time where they don't know we're coming and just see what's going on. And that's a program we have in place, and it's funded. So we're going to think about diverting some of that money into doing constant low level, maybe, but trackers constantly. And you just need to do enough of them so that people think this could be happening at any point. At any point in time, somebody could be watching where we're sending things. And so we're looking at doing that.
What is driving the bad behavior of recycling companies?
Wow. So you can say there's greed out there. Since the beginning of mankind, there's been greedy people. But what's happening right now is not so much that, I don't believe, although that's always present, perhaps. What is happening is the commodity prices have crashed. And so plastic, you don't get as much money for plastic anymore because the oil prices have really come down. Same with metals, worth about a third of what they used to be. So these recyclers were making very small margins anyway and getting most of their value out of just some of the equipment, but not all of the equipment. So some of it costs money to deal with. Other things like copper, of course, has some value. But it's a myth to think that this waste is all that valuable. And people talk about gold and electronics. It's really not the case that most of this material is worth anything. So it costs money to properly deal with it, especially when things are toxic and the value's not there. So where are they going to get their money from? And right now, in many states, in 23 states, the manufacturers are supposed to pay the price. But the manufacturers have had a habit of really lowballing the price they pay to recyclers. They're not giving them a rate that will allow them to be responsible. And this has become especially acute now that the commodity prices have crashed. So to make a long story shorter, the recyclers right now today dealing with electronics are really under a lot of financial stress. And they're looking to cut corners. And you can do it a lot cheaper if you externalize your costs to people that can't deal with it. You can get better rates exporting it than you can here, because here in this country, you have to pay money to take care of it properly.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Jim Puckett, Executive Director and Founder of the Bossel Action Network. Our topic is Band's e-trash transparency project in their Disconnect report. Who is most responsible for the problem of toxic e-waste export?
Well, that's a really good question. There's a lot of shared responsibility here. The manufacturers that design these products, I don't think are doing enough to get rid of the toxics. Until recently, that was the least of their concerns. They would design them however they could just to sell. And they didn't think about what happens at the end of their life. So they didn't design them for recycling. They didn't design them for what do we do when they die. So we had a whole generation, for example, of these old cathode ray tube, you know, televisions and monitors, the big heavy clunker ones. Nobody ever thought, what are we going to do when those are obsolete? And they're extremely difficult to recycle. And right now we have a crisis of dealing with those, which is just starting to taper off. And we have a new crisis of what to do, similarly, with poorly designed, backlit, with mercury lamps that are so tiny you can't even get them out without breaking them. And they designed them in a way you couldn't recycle them. So the manufacturers bear a huge role here. And of course, if consumers were informed about which ones were designed better, they might be able to influence that. And that's our job. Hopefully we can tell people, and there's some tools out there. One of them's called EPEAT, E-P-E-A-T, and you can Google that up. But that's a tool that was created by the government for their own procurement to reward companies that are designing things well and designing things for the environment. So if you want to buy a computer and you want to get the greenest one right now, go to that tool and it'll help you out. But we need to wake the consumer up that these are issues and they demand that the manufacturers get the toxics out of these products. This could just be waste and not toxic waste, but it is toxic waste, so it's a tremendous problem. So we have a responsibility to push the manufacturers and to reward the ones that are designing things in a green way.
How extensive is the export of toxic waste overall? How big a problem is it?
Well, it's difficult to quantify. So we're starting to do these tracker tests, and it's a very small sample size, 200 trackers. But if you extrapolate what we found with the total waste stream, we're talking just to the area of Asia, we're talking about, we're looking at about 50 to 100 containers of electronics a day going out of this country over to Hong Kong. And so that's kind of what it looks like. If you can think of those big intermodal containers, think of 100 or so of them a day going out of the country. That's what it is just for electronics. And there's other waste streams, of course. But electronics is one of the biggest problems right now.
To what extent is the export of toxic e-waste currently regulated? What are the laws in place?
There's almost no laws in this country, especially governing the trade. Like I say, there's some laws that are trying to divert things from the landfill. But what good is it to divert something from the landfill if it ends up in China in a rice paddy? You have to have a very self-centered viewpoint if you don't think that's a problem. And if you even have a self-centered viewpoint, you have to realize that the pollution that's created in China from this actually comes back and hurts us. It comes through the atmospheric long-range transport mechanisms, damages the whole climate. So you're putting toxics out there that are going to come back and harm anybody anywhere.
What are the laws in other countries in regard to toxic e-waste?
Well, in Europe, this type of export is completely forbidden. So they've implemented the Basel Convention and its prohibition against exporting hazardous waste to developing countries. So there it's all a matter of you have the laws in place, you have to enforce them. And there is some leakage even from Europe. And we'd like to set our trackers loose in Europe and see how effective they are at controlling this stream as well.
What are your recommendations for how to address the export of toxic e-waste?
Well, the first one, of course, is to solve it at source, which is to stop creating toxic products, which then become toxic waste when they reach their end of life. That's extremely important not to forget. The second thing is we want to see something very pragmatic, which can be done now, even with our dysfunctional Congress, and that is to get Mr. Obama on his last days, leave a legacy by signing an executive order. That executive order would say, at least for the federal government's waste, we are not going to dump it on developing countries. And that's more than just a symbolism. That is the single largest generator of electronic waste on the planet is the U.S. federal government. So he could do that with a single signature, wouldn't need Congress at all, take care of the federal government's own waste, and of course it would send an amazing message.
Where does the ban plan to go from here? What are your next steps?
Well, we are going to continue this e-trash transparency business with these trackers until we really get the industry to wake up that they can't be doing this kind of stuff anymore. You can't be sneaking things off and externalizing your costs through export. It is illegal from the side of the importing country. So, for example, in Hong Kong, it's illegal to bring it in there. In China, it's illegal. But are they enforcing their laws well enough? Well, if we would this expose and the ones we intend to do in the future, we think we can get Hong Kong to close down all those facilities that are doing it in a terrible way and convert them to good facilities.
How do you hope to persuade companies to put in tracking devices, for example, in their own products?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. But these companies have a lot of concerns about their liability. Liability legal, but also liability in terms of protecting their brand. So if a big company like a bank discovered down the road that their stuff is in China, when they've told the contractor, their recycler, that you can't do that, they're going to be extremely upset. And some of the best, most efficient ways of solving that problem we're finding is not perhaps by hiring a lot of very expensive auditors who come in already pre-announced and people can hide from them, but to put these devices into their equipment and they'll know precisely what's going on. So we do think there's going to be a big market for companies that want to do their due diligence to use this type of technology.
So are you then contacting the companies and requesting they do this?
We will be, yeah. We put a little signal into this report that we're available to help them do it. And so the idea is out there. We're going to probably formalize it because we have a program that's an adjunct to our eStewards Recyclers, which is the eStewards Enterprises. And companies like Boeing, like Bloomberg, like Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Alcoa, they're in our program already. So we're going to be contacting them and say, hey, we got this idea. We have this service that we can provide you. University of Washington is part of the program, the City of Seattle. There's a lot of enterprises and cities and institutions that are in our eStewards Enterprise program.
Do you predict you'll get a positive response?
I don't know yet, but I think so, because the ones that care, like Dell, are getting ripped off. Now they see it. They supposedly were paying people big bucks to go in and check these companies, and the cheating still goes on. So they would probably look for more efficient ways of finding this out.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Be careful of how you dispose of your old electronics. Everybody has electronic waste sooner or later, and it's probably going to be sooner. Your old laptop, your old phone, you have to get rid of it. What do I do with it? Still use eSteward's recyclers. We're going to be policing that program very strictly, and they're still the only ones in the country that are not going to export it by the rule. The other certifications out there allow this type of export. So this is why we created eSteward's, is to solve this environmental justice problem through the marketplace. So use your market. When you get rid of something, just go to those recyclers that are eSteward certified.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Jim.
Thank you, Diane.
You were just listening to Jim Puckett, Executive Director and founder of the Basel Action Network. For more information, check on the web at ban.org. Again, that's ban.org. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on Listener Powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and on kexp.org.